Welcome to the SEI Podcast Series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts.
Ian Goodfellow and Nicholas Papernot, who are two scientists who kind of found, maybe this is a hyperbolic claim, but they're the two leading researchers in the field of adversarial machine learning.
Okay.
And I know Ian Goodfellow was recently named one of his invention, the generative adversarial network, was named one of the top 10 breakthroughs by MIT or something. They just had critical insights that, hey, maybe these neural networks aren't as nonlinear as we think they are. Hmm. They're actually very linear somehow. And by having that insight in mind and then applying all sorts of math, computer science, optimization, numerical computation knowledge to it, they basically made breakthroughs in the field of adversarial machine learning.
Hmm.
And now they're doing amazing. Nicholas Papernot hasn't even finished his PhD yet at Penn State.
Hmm.
So it's the way it's advancing, the way people can just combine insights to do amazing things is breathtaking.
Okay, so I can't let you go without explaining a little bit more about adversarial machine learning.
Sure.
Yeah. What is that
maybe
about?
Actually, could I take this?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Please. So
please.
For the audience, or maybe the more layperson, or even for someone of my level right now, what Ritwik is talking about when he mentions adversarial machine learning is this really interesting way of poking a hole in a system that we thought was doing really well.
Mm.
So if you take, this is an example, if you take a neural network that with very high accuracy labels images correctly on your image data set, it turns out you can just alter a single pixel of an image and then convince it with extremely high accuracy that it's in a totally different label.
Mm.
So you can go from a dog to an airplane by taking one pixel and just messing it up.
You covered this in your blog post,
yeah.
I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is really important for people to know about, because if you're going to make a self-driving tank that has to make a decision about where to go or where to shoot, it needs to make the right decision, and it needs to make a decision that you can trust. And speaking to the adversarial nature, your opponents know that you're using this technology,
mm.
and they are going to do everything in their power to corrupt that one pixel in order to block your gun, right?
Right.
Or the pizza delivery drone that's coming to you.
Yeah, sure, right? Yeah, no, I want my pizza.
Yeah. No, I'll take your pizza by messing with the pixels.
Right, yeah, that's a new form of cyber security concern.
Yes, yes. Concerns everywhere. There was recently a paper which showed that if you stick a sticker on a stop sign, and these happen all the time, right? Sometimes you'll see vandals or graffiti or just a sticker put on a stop sign somewhere. By that sticker existing, image recognition algorithms were fooled 100% of the time that is not a stop sign.
Wow.
They thought it was a speed limit sign or something else.
Because the sticker was so compelling to the
algorithm. It was a tiny sticker,
huh.
And it changed the way it thought about the entire world. So you can imagine a self-driving car driving and thinking the stop sign is actually a speed limit sign and speeding up and just causing a massive four-way collision. And we need to be, so basically what we're saying, what Ian Goodfellow and all these people are in the field are saying is that we make these overblown claims about the robustness and veracity of these algorithms. There are so many flaws that sometimes people who make the claims that we are at the state of artificial intelligence don't know what they're talking about.
Mm.
It's kind of like using a colander to kind of scoop buckets of water out. But there's so many holes that even if it works well for one bucket, there's sure as hell not the
water's moving,
solution.
But will never be finished.
It is. Yeah. It is not the. It's there's yeah. There's a lot of ways to break it.
Okay. So you're really pushing how we understand the utility of deep learning in the cybersecurity space. Given this as a background, can you talk a little bit more about your work there?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I work for a cybersecurity organization, and my research involves analyzing security in software at many stages in its development. So this can be software that you're writing that you don't want people to attack, or it could be software that comes from somebody else who is trying to attack you. And there is some that I'm not allowed to say, but I can say since deep learning has had such success in image recognition, which it really has. I mean, as much as we have tried, I think, succeeded in poking holes in it over the last couple of minutes, it really is doing great in that field. People are very excited, and they say, how can we put this into other problem domains? I've got a terabyte of data, please, please, please. It works really well in certain scenarios. It does not work well in all scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so some of my work in cybersecurity machine learning research is to see, can we take this this technology that's been working great and make it work on this problem domain? Code is a lot different from images. And it turns out code is actually a lot different from even natural language, which is the data set that people are claiming is similar enough to code for the same techniques to work. My current work right now is to investigate, where is that line? What is it good? What is deep learning good at? What is it not good at? Because if we, I believe that it is unethical to continue propagating the claim that deep learning is going to solve every problem. Because what that does is it wastes time, basically. If you are, you know, you get your grant for a year of funding and you claim that you're going to solve this problem and you can't because the problem isn't going to work that way.
So we might see a security firm who sells virus software mm-hmm. look at a malware catalog and try to use these kinds of techniques to come up with new understanding of what their products should contain.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's antivirus software.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yes, antivirus software. So that seems a fairly straightforward surface level place where we'd expect it to work. Where might we be trying to make it work and it's not working? How far away from this very vanilla example I misstated would we go with applying machine learning without revealing things you can't
yeah,
say?
Yeah, well, sure. So even there, actually, I didn't do this work, so I can say it. Mm-hmm. There are people who are using deep learning in the domain of malware detection. Mm-hmm. In classification, you get a new file. You want to know if it's malware. Does it look like any other malware I've seen before? It kind of works, but there's also some limitations. Mm-hmm. In particular, a couple of studies that I've read say we've got like 98% accuracy, and they used, I think, 15 different malware families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot more than 15 malware families.
It is important to state that the subject matter experts in malware analysis, reverse engineering, et cetera, have developed a very good set of tools historically to tackle these problems and their own understanding, and that is combined with deep learning to solve these problems. Deep learning is not the only thing that they're using. By far, it is not the only thing they're using. It comes with the toolkit.
So there might be knowledge about what other techniques, when combined with deep learning applications, have utility of greater or less outcome in particular fields. And
correct.
So yeah. Pairing with other tools and other perspectives is something
correct.
We can learn about here.
Yeah. Or even what features do we know as researchers about that the deep learning model just physically can't learn about
yeah.
by itself?
Mm.
We can kind of add that to the deep learning model and say, okay, you've learned all this stuff on your own, but here's some really important stuff you should be looking at as well that you couldn't learn otherwise.
Yep. So this, I think the claim that it's always going to learn all the features that are useful is absolutely not supported. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a good deep learning researcher will say, listen, like, what features can I give you? Please, take that. And also learn some more in case those weren't good enough.
Right.
I think that it's really, you cannot only view yourself as a deep learning researcher. You need to view yourself as a machine learning researcher, a data scientist, and just say, if I've got some features, I can give them to you, if
right.
I know they matter.
Right. Yeah, and I do have to say, along with that point, is that there is, here at CMU, world-class research being done, not only in all sorts of deep learning techniques, but also in the specific case of representation learning. How do we learn better features, et cetera? And I don't think that a single researcher at the School of Computer Science would disagree that we should just not include features that we already know about. If you know about it, mm-hmm. put it in there in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form. Even though deep learning, the claim to fame is it'll learn everything by itself, why would you want to, right? If I could bootstrap you to do something, then by all means, please bootstrap me, right?
Yeah.
Like exactly what Carson said. So
if nothing else, these models can learn to ignore the feature that you gave it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's
fine.
Yeah.
So is it reasonable to say one of the ways that we can take advantage of deep learning is to go beyond the intuition or past knowledge that we bring to the problem? It can help extend and perhaps create new reason to alter our intuition about what's going on.
Yeah.
Yes, and you can see this happening live with the game of Go, right? Mm. DeepMind with Google challenged Lisa Dole. I may be saying his name wrong. To a game of Go that was televised everywhere on the news, and the machine beat the number. He was number two, I think, the player of Go, and because of the moves that the machine made, people who play Go now are learning from the machine and changing the way that their intuition of Go works. Because it had to learn the game of Go not from a friend, not from a teacher, but from data.
So there's a blessing and a curse there.
Yes.
When we talk about Carson's work in cybersecurity. If we push the boundaries of our understanding of vulnerabilities, do we then fence off some set of vulnerabilities that the bad guys no longer pursue, knowing that these other things that the machine learning has helped us to uncover that our intuition didn't previously cover? Are we getting an immunity to a certain set of bacteria and allowing others to thrive by what we're doing? And it's an interesting philosophical question, maybe.
I think no matter what tool you are using, if you tell your enemies, here's how I'm doing what I'm doing, they will come up with a way to use that against you.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not a super insightful observation, but just...
Just adding to the point about gaining an immunity, I didn't mean to cut you off,
yeah, no,
by the way, I wouldn't even make a stronger claim, is that by using deep learning to learn about vulnerabilities automatically, it goes both ways. Mm. Attackers can learn to exploit a system in ways that are not even intuitive to us at all.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it can, an adversary could learn a representation of a physical, cyber-physical system or whatever that is well supported by data, but would make no sense to us, and automatically find vulnerabilities and attack patterns that would not make sense to a human, but would work together in tandem with each other.
And so people
goes
who build
both
those,
ways.
People who build those systems might want to apply such a technique to assessing the robustness of the system they're building.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So red teams and pen testing teams all around the world do this, right? They test themselves to make sure that they're as robust as possible. So deep learning, yet again, is another cybersecurity tool to be used in all sorts of applications.
Thank you for joining us. Links to resources mentioned in this podcast are available in our transcript. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site and the SEI's YouTube channel. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you.